Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Caroline here. I'm just popping in really quickly because I want to let you know that Serena and I are going to go live on Instagram at 11:30 on Sunday, that's July 26th, to make brunch together. We're going to use the multi-purpose kitchen tool she brings to the show today, and she's going to show me how to use it because guess what? I had it in my kitchen the entire time and I didn't know what it did. So I'm really pumped about this. Serena does this for a living. I do not. We're going to learn as we go, and we hope that you join us. So that's Sunday, July 26th. Follow G Thanks Just Bought It Pod and Serena G. Wolf. Both of us are on Instagram. Just so you don't miss it, we will see you there. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another week of G Thanks Just Bought It, the podcast where we talk about what we just bought and what you might need to buy next. Today, I am joined by chef, cookbook author, and blogger of domesticateme.com, Serena Wolf. She is also, we just talked about this before going, before hitting record. She says those three things are the three defining elements of her career. But now in quarantine, she's been doing virtual cooking classes, which she actually enjoys. Serena, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited to have you here, especially because right now as we're recording this, it's like it's mid-July-ish. We're like a yes. third of the way through July. And I feel like I started off the pandemic / quarantine really strong. I was like, I'm going to make grain bowls and I'm like having eggs every morning. And then I think yesterday I just ate a box of pasta throughout the day. Like we've now sort of like escalated into I now eat like a college frat boy. So I'm very yes. I'm very happy to have you here because I feel like I need like your wisdom and guidance on how to like maintain normalcy through this. And I feel like you have the answers.
I'm like, no pressure. First of all, I love that you said that because I actually feel like most people's experiences have been the complete opposite in the sense that the first few weeks of quarantine, I got so many messages from people being like, I am just eating bags of chips and like things out of my pantry. And then all of a sudden, like a month in, people are like, no, this is the time. I'm going to become like a 5-star chef.
I'm the exact opposite.
But I actually feel the same because the truth is that even though cooking and food is like my job and my passion, I hit a wall last month where in my real life, I do not cook 3 meals a day, 7 days a week. Right. Like that, you know,
totally.
There are dinners out, there are work events, you know, I'm not cooking everything from scratch for every meal. So I hit a wall and I was like, oh my God, I cannot cook one more meal. But I think what started to help me is I've never been a big meal prep person because I am always testing new recipes. And like part of my job is to be like cooking on camera, whether that's like on Instagram or like on TV or whatever it is.
Right.
So I don't like meal prep has never really made sense for me, but over the course of quarantine, I'm like, okay, if I am making a pot of soup or chili, I'm like, I am going to make twice as much and I'm going to put it in the freezer. And I'm like, this is why everybody talks about meal prep.
Yes. Right? And they make it look so easy and they have like all the good Tupperware. They have like cute Pyrex. Oh my God. You know what I mean?
I feel guilty that as somebody who cooks for a living, I'm like, why do I have 18 bottoms to Tupperware and no tops?
I just have like the plastic like Chinese takeout Tupperwares that I just like reuse, but they're, I mean, like it's eco-friendly, you know, because it's not one-use plastic or whatever, but it doesn't look very cute. Like I'm not photographing it.
It doesn't look cute.
It doesn't look cute.
I will say I did consider those. I don't know if I think you're probably talking about the same ones that I am because they're not single use, but it's like kind of what you would get from a restaurant, it's not the actual like white boxes. They're plastic, but you can put them in the washing machine. I ordered those in bulk with both my cookbooks because I would fill them and I would have friends like come pick up the recipes that I was testing over and over. But then I just, even when I'm not working on books, I now just have like 50 of those in my cabinet. And so when people, same thing, people always want to do fridge tours and stuff. I'm like, you don't want to see that.
Yeah. You're like, I want to like be living the home edit life.
But I am not.
No, I'm like, and here's my plastic and here's my other plastic. And right. And here's like 10 Tupperware tops that don't have bottoms.
Yep.
No one wants to see. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. We have and we've been doing that too, because we got on like a baking kick. I think like a lot of people in the beginning of this, like even though I was trying to have 3 square meals a day. The other thing too, that's funny, and I'll add this, is that I work from home anyway. Like nothing about my routine changed.
Ditto.
But I was still like, oh my God, oh, I have to have eggs every day. But we were baking a lot, and then we were like feeling gross, and we were like trying to, you know, retrace our steps, and we were like, oh, I think it's the baking 2 cakes and eating 2 cakes a week thing that's really 1,000%. Throwing us off.
Or like a loaf of bread every 2 days.
The full loaf of bread and like a half a thing of olive oil. And you're like, wow, like, why do I feel so uncomfortable? This is so weird. I can't figure it out. So yeah, we've been doing the same thing where one of our big activities when like truly, you know, the first few weeks where like no one was doing anything was we would bake things, put them in the Tupperware, and then like wave to our friends from our car and like put the food in the mailbox or whatever. And it was like the most exciting thing we'd done all week. But like, yeah, so we just have all this. But the thing about meal prep, and I don't know, I mean, I like the idea of doing a lot of frozen food because then you're not forced to eat it immediately. But I'm always like very perplexed by people who know what they want to eat 5 days from now.
Oh, yeah. And I also like, I support it in that, again, I don't have kids, so I can't. I'm sure it's 10 times more hectic when you're feeding your family.
Must be.
I feel the same way. I'm also like not somebody who likes to eat the same thing multiple days in a row.
No.
So my form of meal prep, like I said, is like, yeah, freezing stuff. But I also make big batches of like sauces or grains or something that I can repurpose in 10 different ways. Like I can use like a pesto like on a bowl in a sandwich as a salad dressing. And I don't have to just eat like chicken, steamed broccoli and a grain.
Right. You know? Totally. Yeah. Like my brain like just doesn't operate this way. Like I can't even. And the thing is like I married someone whose brain does operate that way and is like a very good cook. So like, but when I'm left to my own devices, I all of a sudden am like a 32-year-old woman eating like an 18-year-old boy. I'm like, oh, like cheese on bread. Okay, great. And like not even fancy cheese, like just shredded cheese on top of like a tortilla. And I'm like, oh, you know, it's a quesadilla. And my husband's like, it's not a quesadilla. Like that's just shredded cheese. Like you didn't even like try. And I'm like, oh, who needs to try?
You need both sides in the relationship.
It'll make you appreciate it.
We need that.
Oh, good. Yeah. So he and I can hang out. We can have like, we can share a big box of pasta together.
I need you to know about this though, if you are putting cheese on tortillas, because this didn't count as an item I could bring because I wasn't sure if perishable items were allowed. But
okay,
this is something that I've discovered, like my husband and I discovered at our local grocery store a couple, like the first month of quarantine, and they're Chi-Chi's, like the brand.
Uh-huh.
Chi-Chi's, like tortillas. They're called foldables, and they are shaped like a four-leaf clover.
Okay, I'm Googling right now.
Yeah, so then you put the fillings for whatever you're putting in the tortilla in the center, and then you fold in the side, so it basically makes like a little hot pocket.
Oh my gosh, this is so cool.
It's hilarious because like, sure, you could just take a giant tortilla and cut like pieces out of it and then save those pieces and probably save significant amounts of money. But for whatever reason, these foldables have become, like, I'm pretty sure my husband loves the foldables more than me at this point.
I'm looking at them right now. I can't believe I have never seen these before because this is exactly, like, takes up 4 different sections of my food pyramid. Is like this, whatever this can give me is like my entire diet.
Quesadilla it makes like kind of like a crunch wrap supreme situation.
Yes, it looks like Taco Bell.
Yes,
wow, I'm literally on the Chi-Chi's website right now. And it's like giving you, it's like making it a lot harder than I think it needs to be, but it's like fill plus close equals enjoy. And there's like all these little gifts. And I, and then, oh my God, I'm so, I'm, I love this. Oh my gosh. They can, I'm like, okay, gotta go. Gotta go buy these.
Yeah. Everyone get the Chi-Chi's.
Get the Chi-Chi's foldables. This is, you know, when I was a kid, there were no, my mom did not let me do like Lunchables. She was like, absolutely not. Like, we're not, I'm not buying you Lunchables. And this feels like adult Lunchables to me.
1000%. Could not agree more.
That, you know what? You could have absolutely, this could have been your item and I would have been totally happy with it. Like, you could have been like, yeah, just buy like the Chi-Chi's foldable tortillas. No, this is exactly right up my alley in terms of ability, in terms of the things that I'm craving most, which is usually a carb and a cheese. No, this is great. Wow.
I love, though, that cheese and carbs are really making a comeback in quarantine, and like my whole belief system surrounding food is like everybody has a different definition of balance, so I don't really find that to be helpful.
Sure. Like, totally.
But I am anti-deprivation in the sense that I'm just like, the more we restrict things, the more like the less likely we are to be able to sustain any sort of healthy lifestyle long term.
Right.
And it just brought me a lot of great joy to like see people like eating dairy and carbs.
Yeah. Like, where did all the flour go for like March and April?
I do not know. Like,
I get it. Everyone was doing their sourdough starter, but I was like, are all the people the same gluten-free people we were talking to?
Everybody bought so many beans at the beginning of quarantine. Mm-hmm. So there were several weeks where I was just doing bean recipes.
Yeah. An often overlooked protein, I think.
Truly. And also canned beans are pretty great. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things where, sure, buying beans in bulk is cheap and they're great. And you just have to remember to soak them overnight. And like we were talking about, it's very difficult to decide what you want to eat in advance. Rarely remember to soak the beans.
Yes. I live with a bean head. Dan loves a bean. Actually, we had Molly Chen on the podcast even like way before this all started. And we were talking about how she's like a real bean person too. And we were talking about beans in January, like before it was cool. So we were really happy. in March when everyone was buying meat. Yeah, we were early adopters of the bean life. But I will say that there is always beans soaking somewhere in my house at any time and always have been. But beans, and I will say about the canned beans is like
I'm picturing like your Tupperware takeout is filled with beans.
You don't have to picture it. I'll send you a picture of that actually happening. That is truly how it goes in my house. Something's always being pickled or something's always being soaked. But the thing about canned beans is, again, level of ability.
Yes.
For me, the soaking feels, I need to reduce the amount of opportunities I have to fuck up something. So
totally.
Opening a can of beans feels like I'm skipping like 8 different steps that I will probably get wrong. And so I'm very thrilled, pleased, relieved to hear that you think an actual chef thinks canned beans are okay.
It's so funny to me when people are always so nervous to tell me about a shortcut they took, or I always find it deeply hilarious when I go to like close friends' houses and they're like, I'm so nervous to feed you dinner. And I'm like, I'm so pumped to not be cooking. I don't understand why people, and not just in pandemic times, always, it cracks me up that people think that I'm going to judge them more harshly. I'm just like, this is thrilling. And occasionally people will make my recipes and then I'm like, you know the way to my house.
Oh my gosh. Wait, that's really exciting. Like, have you gone to like friends' houses where someone's like, I'm serving you your own food?
Yes. And it's like people, again, this is such a hilariously narcissistic thing to say. Like, I love when people make my own food. No, but I think what makes me happy, especially if they're really proud of it, is that's why I like to create recipes. It's like, I love when people are proud of something they've made, especially people who are not super comfortable in the kitchen.
Yeah.
When they're able to pull something off that is delicious and that they feel is impressive. And sometimes it's just my friends will send me pictures of recipes that of mine that they've made for their family.
That's
or
so
like
nice.
Served at an at their like on Thanksgiving. Oh my one gosh. Of my best friends every year, I make her a side recipe every year for Thanksgiving, and she makes it, and it's really funny because she'll be like, honestly, people didn't love it as much as last year's side. What?
Yeah, she's like has a spreadsheet with like notes.
Yeah, she's like, honestly, 2015 was still the winner.
Wait, that's amazing. That's so flattering.
It's the best. It's the one thing about doing what I do that is really cool to see. And that's why I've started teaching virtual cooking classes in quarantine. Mm-hmm. And it's so hilarious and so much fun. And I thought I was really nervous to start doing them because I was like, there's no way that this competes with an in-person class.
Yeah.
But in an odd way, it's much more intimate because typically in an in-person class, unless I do occasionally a class where I go to somebody's apartment, but for the most part, if it's a public class, I'm in like a test kitchen or right. some sort of event space or whatever. And here I'm in my own kitchen and then people are in their own kitchens. And it's just really funny. And like you see, sometimes it's couples, sometimes it's whole family, sometimes it's just one person. And some, you know, smoke alarms go off
yeah.
or like you can see people because they're on mute, but you can see their camera and you can always see couples bickering, which cracks me up. And it's just a really intimate experience and people can ask questions. So like it is interactive.
Yeah.
And then I think people just are craving group energy. So having the camera on, like I don't force people to turn their camera on if they don't want to,
sure.
but I encourage people to turn their cameras on. And then there's this funny group energy and I usually make a cocktail at the beginning. And then like at the end, people have dinner. And it's just one of those awesome things where it's the one part of my job. Like lots of people say, you know, food is love and food is connection or whatever. And I'm like, yes, that's definitely true. 1000%.
Yeah.
But it's one of those ways like where I feel really grateful for the internet. And I'm always like grateful for the internet. There are lots of downsides to it.
Sure.
But it's one of those things where it's like, cookbooks, well, there will always be a market for cookbooks because for whatever reason, people still like to hold physical cookbooks in their hand versus yeah. like on a Kindle.
Yeah.
But there's something about being able to share recipes on the internet where you just are able to reach so many people that you would never ordinarily reach. Mm-hmm. And then like some, they make one recipe and like the best compliment I can get, and it's happened a lot more in quarantine because people are being forced to cook. Yeah. They're like, I started making your recipes and the first ones were, they were not great, but I was okay. Like I got through it and they're like, and now I feel like I'm doing so well and I get so many compliments.
Oh my gosh, that's so nice.
I think the truth is like, I always tell people, I'm like, compliments feel good. So when you cook for them, if you serve somebody food that you've made, they're probably, even if it's bad, going to lie to make you feel
sure.
good.
So
sure. you're going to make this food and you're going to feel proud and then you're also going to get compliments and it's going to be amazing.
I like love that because I feel like I don't cook for anybody because no one wants that. But I like the idea that I also have friends who cook professionally and I'm in the boat that your friends are in, which is like, I am kind of I don't want to like tell them if I'm cooking their food because I know it's not as good as if they were to make it. And so now I feel like better knowing that they probably still just want to hear that I'm cooking it anyway.
Yes.
Like yeah. that would just make them happy. Okay. I'm like, I like hide, like we did. So, well, to the virtual cooking class, I think you're right in that it is more intimate and it also probably teaches more because when you're in your kitchen, like that's your stuff. So
yes.
like in a test kitchen, when you have everything available to you, you know, it is kind of more difficult to go home and replicate that, especially if you don't have all the like tools.
Yeah. And it's super easy for somebody to ask while I'm cooking, be like, oh, like I don't have that. What should I use? And I'll be like, okay, go to your spice cabinet. And I'll be like, read me what you have.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're like
or
learning in your environment. I mean, I feel like that's probably, I don't know. That's great. Do you ever teach classes where people are like, I don't have anything that you need from me right now? Like, I don't have this kind of knife. I don't have this spice. I don't have this pan.
Yes, but this is also a hilarious, like, thing in the real world is sometimes when people are cooking they feel so nervous about substitutions. And I totally get that because prior to culinary school, I had no clue how to cook and I had to follow a recipe. And if without a recipe, I was just completely lost. And even with a recipe, I was mostly lost. But as I, you know, over the years, you gain more and more confidence. And I'm always like, the best way to become a confident cook is to experiment and make substitutions. And then when they work, you're like, oh, I can do this in other recipes or in other, you know, when I'm making another dish based on what's in my fridge. And if it doesn't work, you also learn something from that. I mean, one of my favorite sayings is like, success teaches you nothing. All the teachable moments are failures. But
yeah,
I think you learn a lot and you have to experiment to gain confidence. So I get questions every day being like, can I substitute ground chicken for ground turkey in this recipe? And I always answer. And then I'm like, my secret goal is for us to get to a point where you feel comfortable substituting one white lean ground meat for another white lean ground meat.
When I do cook and I really like kind of like, okay, let's do this. I always feel like by the end, when the meal is done, it's like the last thing I want to eat.
I get this all the time from people and I totally understand that.
What do you say? What do you tell people?
Part of my strategy is I'm like, you must not continuously eat what you're making. I notice that's a habit of a lot, like little chef snacks, you know, throughout. It's like, oh, I'm just going to have like a bite of this or a bite of that. Because I find that most times, part of the reason that you're not that excited is because you're pretty full already.
Right. Yes. I've already eaten like half the taco toppings. I'm like, well, I don't really need a taco.
Yes. It's like, you know, like you're grating cheese for the topping and then you just eat a couple blocks of cheese. You know, it's like that. Then you're not as excited. But also I'm like, create a little bit of ambiance. It sounds silly, but I'm like, have, you know, pour yourself a cocktail if you drink cocktails, or turn music on, or put on a audiobook that you're like excited to listen to. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes I will talk on the phone. Like I'll call somebody that I've been wanting to talk to and like put in like AirPods or put them on speaker and then like talk while I'm working.
Uh-huh.
And then it just makes the whole process a little bit more pleasant. You also like don't snack as much and then you're excited. But I also say that like cooking simpler meals, like for some reason, sometimes the most simple meals are the most delicious. And
yeah,
it's always the clean out the fridge stuff that I like the most. And last week I weirdly made, I had some leftover like chicken breast that I chopped up and roasted broccoli and like some brown rice. And I just like warmed it all together with a bunch of lemon juice and like scallions. And I was like, why is this so good? And I was like, probably because you only spent 6 minutes.
Okay. Serena, I have to stop you because so someone tweeted maybe a few weeks ago and it was like, what is a thing that like everyone else seems to understand but makes no sense to you? And my answer was literally clean out the fridge meals. Like, because I'm like, why do I want to eat my like very close to garbage food? Like, everyone who does it, everyone's like, oh, I just took like my nearly rotted fridge of food and here's this amazing meal. And I'm like, why when I do it, it looks even more disgusting than it did when it was on the brink of death. How does everyone know how to do a clean out the fridge meal? Like what? I mean, like what? How do you do it? I just like need the basics. Like what do you do?
Okay, so this.
I like truly don't understand. This is so foreign to me.
This is not meant to sound harsh, but it's like, perhaps the clean out the fridge should be happening more often.
Correct.
So that it's not as sad.
I think maybe that's where I was going. I think like one time I found like a head of lettuce or like something similar that like had gone past both of us, like a number of different clean outs. And I think like that image has stayed with me for a long time. And now whenever I think of clean out the fridge meals, I think of that lettuce and I'm like, I don't think I could ever figure out something to do. I'm not like eating, like I'm not going to like eat a rotted food or whatever, but I don't know, when I see like two cherry tomatoes and like one, you know, like clove of garlic and, you know, a potato that's almost at the end. I don't like see anything. Like I can't visualize a meal.
This is going to be something going forward where you're just going to say, it'll be like chopped. You're going to send me a picture of like four things.
Yeah. I'm like, what is this?
And you're like, please help.
Yeah. I'm like, you'll get a text from me like tonight. I'll be like, okay, I'm putting you to work now. How do you?
But like, I do. Yeah. Like, I do think it's really hard. I completely agree. It's like, I'm somebody who I also think if you don't cook a lot and you sometimes buy things that you're like, that sounds good right now in the store, or like, oh, there's like cherry tomatoes on sale. I'm going to get 3 pints of these and I'm only one person. You know? Right. So then you end up with very strange things. And I think I'm somebody who I do think it comes with practice. But I also think that like sometimes people will shop specifically for a recipe and then they'll end up with like odds and ends from that recipe, which can be very tricky.
Okay.
But I do find like when you were like at the beginning of quarantine, you were going to start making grain bowls and all these things. Grain bowls, you know, take the trendiness out of them, are essentially clean out the fridge meals.
Right.
like you just take any vegetable, saute it or roast it, throw it into a bowl with a grain, and then you just need a sauce of some kind. So like a pesto or a romesco, a hummus, a vinaigrette, something. And or like use like a store-bought sauce. So no shame in that either. The only thing I'm like Gwyneth-y about that I am like, do not substitute that is when I see, I don't know why it bothers me so much, but it's my one thing. It's fresh garlic. When people like buy the jars of pre-minced garlic, or substitute garlic powder. Garlic powder is not a substitute for fresh garlic. I would never make, I love garlic powder. I would never make a taco seasoning or a ranch dressing or something without garlic powder.
Uh-huh.
But it is not a direct substitute. And I don't know why I get so up in arms about it, but I did see an old like Anthony Bourdain quote and I love Anthony Bourdain. Uh-huh. And he said something along the lines in typical, like, extremely harsh fashion, like, if you are too lazy to mince a garlic clove, like, you do not deserve to eat good food.
Wow. So Serena's in the pocket of big garlic. Yeah. No, but you know what? I've heard it inside the four walls of my home, too. I buy the jarred garlic because sometimes it's just nice to have. And I get yelled at often. So this I think is a very popular way of thinking for people who know their way around the kitchen. It's like fresh garlic is like there's nothing you can buy that will be able to replace it in the way that you want it to.
And I think people's aversion to it really boils down to the smell on their hands. And I totally get that. And I also considered, first of all, I've never put more thought into what I wanted to bring
excited.
What I wanted to talk about on a podcast. So like for the past, like we made this date like 3 months ago.
Every once in a while
I'll be doing something and I'll be like, oh, this is a good thing. but you can buy, there's a chemical reaction that happens. I cannot explain it, but between like the compounds in garlic and stainless steel. So you can buy a bar of stainless steel soap that you just, it's super cheap, that you just keep by your sink. And then you wash your hands with that after slicing or mincing garlic. And like the smell goes away.
Will it work with fish too?
No, not the same chemical reaction.
Got it. Okay. Well, we're gonna have to work on that one. That may
we're gonna have to work. Maybe that will be my.
That is so. See, I love. Yeah, that should be your Shark Tank item. I love the smell of garlic. It doesn't bother me. I'm just purely lazy, and I don't know how to chop garlic in a fashion that makes sense. Or like usually, if I chop garlic, there's just like a big chunk of garlic in the food, and then nowhere else. Which I think some people like.
When do we transition to my tool?
So we're gonna take a quick break because I was like, we're gonna do it every 10 minutes and now I've been just chatting, like shooting the shit for 30. So we're gonna take a quick break and then we're gonna come back and we're gonna continue to talk about garlic and we're gonna see what Serena brought to G Thanks Just Bought It. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Okay.
So this is just like the title of the episode is going to be like garlic.
Yeah.
So my tool that I brought, and I have a supplemental one sitting next to it because it's literally been keeping me up at night deciding between these two things.
Oh my gosh, I can't.
But
wait.
It is a microplane fine grater zester. And this is the perfect segue because I literally use it every day to grate garlic and it does exactly what you just said that you wanted to avoid. It turns the garlic into a paste, so you're never going to get a chunk of garlic. And it also takes like 5 seconds to grate a garlic clove, and it takes, you know, we all know mincing garlic is a bitch. Like, it sucks. Yeah. No matter how, you know, I am a chef and I don't like to mince garlic. And also, like, it, to get it really small and finely minced.
Yeah.
Like, you can't rush it. And typically, like, especially if you're not super experienced with a knife, you'll have different size pieces of garlic. And, like, if you put that in a salad dressing or something, there is nothing worse than taking a bite of something and getting, like, a chunk of raw garlic. So while it totally doesn't matter if you're making, like, a pasta sauce or something and your garlic is not evenly minced, like, whatever, it's gonna cook, it's gonna soften, it's gonna dissolve into the sauce. But if you are making, like, a salad dressing or a marinade or a sauce, like a peanut sauce or something that's not going to be cooked, when you grate the garlic on the microplane, it makes this paste that then beautifully emulsifies, like, it completely dissolves into whatever you're making.
Wow.
So you just get that flavor, but it's a paste. And same thing, like, I wouldn't use it if I were, you know, if you're cooking garlic and onions or something, you don't want to use the paste because it might, like, clump or stick and burn more easily in the pan. But, like, for anything that you're not cooking, but, like, if I'm making a stir fry sauce too, like, if I'm mixing, like, something like soy sauce and rice vinegar and grated garlic, then I will mix it all together versus mincing the garlic, and then I'll add the sauce last, and then you also get, like, a stronger hit of garlic. But, like, not, and just to make sure that this is not purely sold as a garlic grating tool. I use this thing every day and I'm creepily obsessed with it. And I, like, I traveled with it on my book tour so that I could use it in demonstrations.
Wow.
I, like, actively have said that it's, I mean, it is my most used kitchen tool, because I use it for garlic. Yes. I also use it for ginger. I use it for grating cheese, citrus, chocolate.
Like, oh, wow.
It's very, very versatile. But, like, it's just, it's also, like I said, like, it takes 5 seconds to mince a garlic clove or to grate a garlic clove. But I do want to say quickly, just on the subject of garlic, a garlic press is a great thing to use to, like, mince garlic, but you have to wash it immediately. And I'm talking, like, within 5 minutes of using it, because otherwise that garlic shit, like, this part of the clove that when you press it through, like, the outer skin, like, stays in there basically, and it hardens really fast, and then you can never ever fully get it off. So whenever I, like, look at people's garlic presses, there's always hardened garlic on the inside, including my own, and I'm like, you have to wash it right away.
Oh my gosh. Wait, so this is, like, this I think is, feel like, I think we actually even might have, this is how uninitiated I am in my kitchen, is the microplaner, like, the long, like, stick?
Yes.
I think we have one already. And I'm really excited because I didn't even know what you could do with it. I just thought it was a small cheese grater, which I guess it is.
It is. It is. Like, I use it for Parmesan all the time. But, like, the thing is the one that I'm literally, like, holding this in my hand and waving it around.
Like, wielding it like a sword.
Yeah. I'm like, shaking it vigorously and being like, I love this thing. But you can also put it in the dishwasher, which is huge, because, like, I'm always trying to put everything in the dishwasher. But this is the long, skinny stick one. At home, I also have a paddle one. And it's, like, basically, I would say probably 3 times. It's also made by Microplane, also fine grater zester. But I think it's just called, like, paddle fine grater zester. And it's, like, 3 times the width, which I find is better for cheese because you can, like, you have more surface area to grate on. For garlic, I find the skinny one to be better. But for somebody who's nervous in the kitchen, I recommend the paddle one because you have more stability.
Okay. Okay. That tracks for me. Nervous in the kitchen. I love the idea that I didn't even know what it was, but I know that we have one in the in the kitchen. But also that I was, like, a moron trying to chop my own garlic. And, like, you have to have knife skills to chop garlic. Like,
you do.
You can't just be like, A, you're gonna, like, chop your finger off. Which my friend actually did, like, at the end of March. And
no.
Oh, yeah. He like, severed his thumb, like, slicing an avocado, which is not the first. Do you know that avocado knife injuries are, like, the number one injury that hospitals see in terms of, like.
Yes, which, like, I know. So every time I slice an avocado or remove the pit, because, you know, you stick the knife into the pit and then you pull the pit out.
Yep.
Every time I do that online, I get a bunch of messages from people being like, oh, that video gave me so much anxiety. I was so worried that you're going to cut your palm. And then I was like, oh, it's okay. You know, when it comes to slice, I'm like, I practice this a lot, but I was like, don't worry about the pit thing. Like, the knife's going to get stuck in the pit. And I once got a DM from somebody that was like, no, like, for some reason, I guess her knife was really sharp and she applied a lot of force, but it went through the pit and into her hand.
Oh my God.
And I was like,
I'm going to throw up.
Oh my God. So now I think about this every time I do it. So I've like started doing it whenever I video it. I will like put the avocado on the cutting board before I do it, just so I don't give people anxiety.
Holy shit. Yeah.
I know.
And you are supposed to, you know, always have sharp knives because they tell you the dull knives are going to be the ones that kill you. And here we are. Now the sharp knives are the ones that kill you. You can't really win. And
you got to be so careful with, I mean, I sharp knives really do make all the difference. But like, there are certain things that I warn people of all the time because you want to make like a, you basically look like you're making a claw on top of most things when you're cutting, like, so that you're pulling your fingers in and then you're exposing your knuckles, so you're not going to get your fingertips.
Yep.
But sometimes when you're doing something like herbs and your fingers get kind of lost in the bundle, that is very dangerous. But I cut myself so much when I was in culinary school, and it was very shameful. Like, they would it was very shameful to cut yourself or burn yourself. So I was always like sneaking out. There was a first aid box in the hallway.
Bleeding out.
So I was always like sneaking out. And they have these little things that you put on your finger for cuts. They literally, we called them finger condoms, but I don't know what they're actually called. They like literally roll down your finger and trap the blood as it comes out. It's disturbing, but it's like, I would just slide one of those on and like go about my class because I didn't want to get a bad grade.
Wow. I'm imagining that scene in Julie and Julia where she's chopping onions. Yes.
And also people ask me to do that all the time because I did go to Cordon Bleu and I'm like, I can't.
Yeah.
And also like, that's not what we learned there.
Right. That is so funny. Like, I thought being burned in the kitchen was like a rite of passage. And
I definitely think that it is, especially in restaurant kitchens, like when you're on the line and stuff, because there's always different things open. And then it's like, those are your war wounds.
Yeah.
But I think culinary school, it was more like buttoned up. And they also probably didn't want the liability of us like seriously injuring ourselves.
Yeah. Or like competing with each other to see like who can like bleed out the most during knife skills.
Yes.
I really love I love that idea of just running out and like putting a finger condom
on. It was like very,
on,
like, yeah, like very discreet. And you're like, how? Or like, there were times where I'd like do the same thing with a burn and I'd be like running it under cold water. And I'm like, you have 1.5 more hours before you can actually take care of this.
Oh my God. That's how rigorous it is, huh?
Yeah, it was actually, that was funny about Cordon Bleu because I went to like the flagship or whatever in Paris.
Yep.
And they were so, I in my head I think had a very naive romantic vision in my head, probably partially shaped by Julie and Julia,
of course,
where I assumed that I would arrive and be roasting chickens and drinking wine and chopping onions really fast. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, no, that is not what we do here. And it's also primarily, it was, I don't know how things have changed over the past 10 years, but it was primarily very old French chefs, and they do not like women and they do not like Americans.
Yep.
So I already had 2 strikes against me.
That's right.
And I thought I spoke really good French and turns out I did not. And then also I did not know how to cook. So a lot of the words that they were saying in French, when I would get the English translation, I'm like, still don't know what that means.
Oh my God. Did your French get better after being there?
Yeah, it got a lot better. I mean, my listening, like my comprehension skills were great, but my speaking skills were still not that great. But at the same time, it's the same as, you know, when I hear somebody where English is their second language, like I know exactly what they mean, even if the grammar isn't perfect, you know? So I would say a lot of things, like I'd be like, you know, like, no, like I wait the train, you know, like people know.
Yeah.
People know what I'm saying. But my like culinary French got very good, and I just didn't realize, and I'm grateful that I did it, but I don't do it any longer. It's like every protein, vegetable, like whatever you're working with, you always got it in its whole form. So like if I was cooking fillets of fish, I was going to scale, gut, and fillet that fish. And like I have not scaled and gutted a fish since culinary school.
That's not part of your everyday routine.
I'm like I literally, there's the second term is mostly fish, and like I smelled like fish for 3 months. No matter how many showers I took, I would have like a scale hanging from the bottom of my like a piece of hair, and I was like, I'm a disgusting human.
So well, as you, the smell of fish really like grinds me to a halt. Like as I said, I was so excited that maybe the garlic thing would work on the fish, but it wouldn't. But like that, I steer clear. I love fish, but like I have to eat it outside my house because I cannot. My whole house will smell like fish for weeks, and then you'll also. I mean, it's not like anyone's coming to my house, but it's also like, I don't know. You think it's gone, and then you like leave your house for like a few hours, and you come back, and you're like, this still smells like fish. Like the fish lingers, and I don't like that.
So I totally get that, and my husband feels exactly the same way. I kind of like don't mind the smell, especially like if it's fresh fish. But one trick I will say is if you cook fish in parchment paper, like you know, in French, it's like fish en papillote. It's like those little packages. You like make basically a little package with fish and vegetables and whatever inside it in parchment, and then you bake it in the parchment, and it like contains the smell.
Oh, see, you're giving me all of the good. Everything that folds up is the thing I'm gonna buy. Like, I'm gonna buy the chi-chis, and I'm gonna buy these parts. Everything like this is all the tricks of the trade that I don't know. You know,
I'm totally.
Like, I'm so excited about like a garlic zester now because. Truly, like, we had this argument about the jarred garlic that was in our fridge the other day, and I was told that was we were not supposed to use it, and I was like, I don't really care. Apparently, I was the only one that didn't care. Do you have a do you have like the oh wow, this is also a this is a zester and a press together. It's a prester.
I have not seen that.
It looks very cool. Do you have a specific brand that you go to, or is it just like the tool in general?
No, it's the brand is Microplane. Okay. One word.
Microplane. I'm like Googling it. I'm going to see if this is the one that I have. I think I have it. Oh, yeah. I do have this.
And they're very like, I think it's, I don't know. I think it's like $11 or something.
Yeah, it's very like, yeah, it's like
and
15
I've had the
bucks.
Same one for, yeah, I've had the same one for like 7 years. Like,
wow.
And also, you know when you love something so much but you know it's weird, it's like I always consider bringing this to somebody as a housewarming gift, or like
I think that's
as like
nice.
A, like when I go to a dinner party, like I'm like, can I bring them a microplane? Yeah. Or would they be like, what the fuck's wrong?
No, I think it's like a really nice, because like no one else is gonna give that to them, you know.
I like, in case they don't know, it would be like, do you, I'm like, maybe I could like make a little care package of microplane and like a head of garlic and like a piece of ginger. It's like, go to town.
I love that. Wait, that's a really good idea. Like, just like ward off the vampires, and also here's a microplane. That's so fun. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, this is like, it's like $15, and I also think that like you said, you use it on chocolate. When do you have to microplane chocolate?
If you want to like put it on top of like a cupcake or a cake, or if you want to put some on top of like, you know, a bowl of fruit, or it's like decorative basically.
Wow. These are things I do not, none of this ever occurs to me.
I mean, let's be real, I'm not grating chocolate that much.
Yeah. But you know what though? I love that. Like,
but
you,
I like to know that I could.
Exactly.
If I wanted to.
Exactly. This is a wonderful product. I'm excited. Like, I'm really excited that you brought this, because this is a thing that actually I know that we own. I don't use. I'm looking at like there are pictures of like how to zest a fruit, which is something I don't know how to do. And one time like really messed up a cake because of dairy and citrus and didn't really think about it. And then it happened. And I was like, no, it's fine. I followed all the directions. I was so embarrassed. And I was with my friend and she was like, did you follow the directions? Because I thought zest was just like... like just squeeze the juice in, and you know the frosting came out like all kind of like curdly, and and she was like, I don't know that you followed like all the directions. I'm like, no, I did. I did everything correct. I don't, something's wrong with the oven. It's not me. Couldn't be me. I would never mess this up. And then like secretly I like Googled it later and I was like, oh, okay.
You're like, whatever.
Yeah, I was like, all right, well, they should have said that.
Carol, I'm the one leaving like the type of like book reviews, the like, cookbook reviews that, like keep me up at night, where she's like, this recipe does not work.
It's
and like, you know, the person did something wrong, but you don't know what it is. And you're just like, I tested that 20 times. Like, it definitely worked.
If I had if I had an ounce of, if I didn't understand how hard book reviews are for the authors that write them, yes. if I wasn't even like a tiny bit aware of how dumb I was in the kitchen, I would be like, I don't know. Seems like you did something wrong with your book, because I followed all the directions. And it's like, yeah, okay. Like, I famously like get very bored of waiting for water to boil, and like we'll eat like a very al dente pasta because I'm like, I don't care.
I said, this is like the one thing in all of my cooking classes that I always say. I'm like, look, like, I do not, and nor do any other recipe writers, like, put things in recipes like just to mess with you. Like, what I say, like, when I'm like, get the pan screaming hot, I was like, I know that half of you are like waiting like 30 seconds and being like, it's hot enough.
That's me. I'm in that. I'm
and
like,
then they're like, and then they're like, but the, nothing is, nothing browned. And I was like, I know your pan was not hot, damn it.
I feel like that's where the virtual cooking classes must be really helpful.
I'll see people doing stuff and I was like, nope, your pan is definitely not hot. My pan still isn't hot. Yeah. Step away.
That is so funny. Like, I was thinking back to, I'll have to send you this video, but back in May, my friend Emily and I, and Emily runs digital for New York Times Cooking. So yeah. She and I did this Instagram Live where we did the Julia Child omelet challenge, where we were trying to make like the 14-second omelet where she just like puts. And it was so funny to do, because she's doing it like perfectly and I'm like throwing eggs around the kitchen. Like, I could not get a hand. She was like, grab the handle. And like, she and I are so close, so like she can like just scream at me through the phone. Like, she's not trying to be like nice. She's like, Caroline, grab the handle. She's like, get a grip on the handle. And like, the eggs are like literally like just like slicking on the butter and like flying across the room. And I feel like if it were just me by myself and she wasn't like watching me and like screaming at me and being like, do it, like, this is the time, or like, you know, because in that sort of situation, the timing is everything. You have literally like 15 seconds to go from like, you know, really, really hot buttery pan to like edible omelet. And totally. If you miss that window, you're screwed. And I can't even imagine the people who are like doing it by themselves, because it was really, really difficult. But like, I would 1000% have been the person that tried it by myself and been like, doesn't work, Julia Child.
Doesn't work. I'm like, that's, I mean, I remember when I was writing my first book and just in a spiral of like self-doubt, you know, first time with anything. Like, I was like, I had such bad imposter syndrome. I was like, what am I doing?
That's right.
And I was like I was testing all these recipes over and over. And then I was having recipe testers and friends test them. And I was like, you know, I just am so nervous that something might not work. And like, one of my best friends is like, listen, I am a shitty cook. If I make any of your recipes and it doesn't work, and she's like, or any recipe that is in a printed book and it gets messed up, I'm just like, oh, I fucked something up.
True.
She was like, I'm not like this author, no. A liar and a piece of trash.
Truly self-realized people know their weaknesses. And I mostly just get mad because I'm like, you know, the Serena Wolfs of the world make it look so easy, but I can't make this omelet. But I understand it's my fault.
This is like how we all have something. Like, this is how I feel whenever I watch makeup tutorials. I'm like, what the fuck?
Don't even get me started. You know what? That was a quarantine goal for me. I was like, I'm going to learn how to finally like apply eye makeup. And I was like, yeah, I don't really care.
I also just like, whenever somebody's like, oh, like in the concept of you make it look so easy.
Yeah.
I always want to remind people, I'm like, yeah, but like, you guys, like, I literally went to school for this and I've been doing it for 10 years. And like, you know, that's, and same thing with somebody who's like a professional makeup artist or a professional fitness instructor. I'm like, we are not expected to be able to do these things.
Oh my gosh. And, like, correct.
We must remember that. And I was laughing so hard because at the beginning of quarantine, I felt extraordinarily lucky and privileged to be like, wait a second, because like, I also have terrible anxiety, and so like, and I work from home and all these things, and all of a sudden people were like, I need to learn how to cook, I'm super anxious and I need to know how to work from home, and I was like, this is my time.
Yeah. I was like, truly,
we are going to We are going to talk about all these things. And then when I was giving like work from home tips, like every single other person on the internet, I was like, casual reminder, you guys, that the first 4 years I worked from home was a disaster. So I was like, don't beat yourself up if you can't get the hang of it in like 3 days.
It's not. It is not an overnight, even still. And because you and I are similar in that, like, you know, we work on our own schedules. Like I work on my own timeline. Like I have deadlines for things, but it's not like an everyday need to show up. And so there will be like a lot of days where I'm like, work. I'm not going to do it. Like 4 days later, I'm like, oh my God, I have so much to do. But like, that is a thing that like, if someone was actually asking me for like legitimate tips, I would be like, put yourself on a routine. Not like I do it, but you should do it. Like, try to get yourself in habits. Like, I've been doing this for 6 years. It's lost on, like, it's too late for me, but save yourself now. We're going to take another quick break and we will be right back.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I would like to find the enjoyment in cooking. It's definitely like, I want to be able to feel confident and relaxed enough in the kitchen. Like that's my goal, to be able to be like, cooking is like a fun activity and not like 60 minutes of me like constantly running back to the iPad for the recipe being like, I don't know how to measure this. Like, what is this? Or like not knowing what zesting is and ruining. A cake. So like, I like that you were like, put on an audiobook, like call a friend, have a drink, like make it an activity.
Also my last two hot tips, now that we're doing the kitchen tips, is like, having a full like mise en place, so like having all of your ingredients, I put them on a baking sheet, like my ingredients, having them all out and prepped before I turn any sort of heat on or like attempt to start cooking. And like people, whenever I have a class, I'll have all the ingredients like in little prep bowls. And I'm like, look, you guys, I'm not a total psycho. If I'm not teaching a class, I just make piles of this on my cutting board. Right. I'm not trying to do, like, I do not recommend that you do extra dishes. I'm just saying like having everything prepped, because the problem is like most people will start cooking a recipe before having maybe read through the entire thing, but also they don't have everything out. So they'll be like cooking garlic and onions, and the garlic and onions are perfect. And they're like, yay, what's next? And it's like, add the diced zucchini. And it's like, oh, I haven't diced the zucchini. And then
that's me.
And then the onions and garlic burn while you're dicing the zucchini, and like everything falls apart. So it's just having everything out and ready to go. And also reading the whole recipe before you start cooking.
I've heard this.
Very, very, very important. But then also having a trash bowl or compost bowl in front of your cutting board will change your life. Like just being able to throw bits and pieces of, you know, scraps throughout the whole cooking process, and you don't have to go back and forth to the trash can. Or if you're like me and is super lazy and you who would not go back and forth to the trash, would just make like a pile on the kitchen counter, like on the, on the cutting board, which is gross. Having that bowl there is so, it's such a game changer.
That
so.
Is a really, really good tip. You know, there's a, and I feel like I know what your answer is going to be, but you know, there are like all those products, and I've seen it on Shark Tank, speaking of Shark Tank, but it's like, we developed a cutting board that has like a drawer in the bottom. And like, it's like, can I just use a cereal bowl and just like do that? Like, do I have to buy like a fancy cutting board for this?
It's like, absolutely not. And also I find weird kitchen things. Like sometimes people will come into my kitchen and they're like, oh, this is like surprisingly like my kitchen. I'm like, what did you think it was gonna be like? Of course it is. But I'm very lo-fi in that sense. It's like, I hate single-use kitchen tools.
Oh my gosh, every actual chef says that. I love that.
Which is why I love the microplane. Very versatile.
Yes, chocolate, zest, garlic. No, you're one-use kitchen tools are a waste of space. Yes,
like they're such a waste of space. Like people who are like, this is like my what do they call it? It's like an avocado blanket or something. That's like just for saving avocados. Or like, God. Here's like my like The one single-use kitchen tool that I'd be like, okay, fine, is like a cherry pitter, because pitting cherries is a nightmare.
Serena, you should literally be married to my husband. Like you guys would run away together and like just have a happy kitchen. And then me and your husband can hang out and eat like hard pasta. Yeah, exactly. And eat chi-chis.
What is that show, like Wife Swap?
Yeah, Wife Swap, right. That's what we'll do. I mean, like, we could do like a quarantine version of it. We should just like pitch someone and be like, yeah, give us money, we'll do it. You said that you were thinking about a bunch of different items to bring, and now that like I'm just so on board with literally everything you have said, I really have to know what else almost made the cut. I need you to put it all out there.
So sitting on my floor right now, because Caroline said I should be in a carpeted room. Yeah. So I'm just sitting on my bedroom floor.
Your sound sounds great, by the way. So it does. It did work.
So I am like weirdly obsessed with my Yeti tumblers. So I think this one is 12 ounce and then I have the 16 ounce. They're like Rambler tumblers. Oh. And they're insulated cups, and I have tried over the years every type of like insulated cup, like the cheapos, Corksicle. Yeti blows them out of the water.
Yeah.
So I drink my coffee out of it in the morning, and I'm a slow coffee drinker. Some people drink their coffee really fast. I drink my coffee over like the course of an hour. So it stays hot, which is important. And then I put my smoothies in the larger one and they stay cold. And then I only drink, like if I'm in public, I will make a sacrifice, but I only drink like cocktails out of my Yeti.
Wow.
Because the ice doesn't melt, and then it doesn't dilute my cocktail.
I'm looking at the Yeti site right now. There are so many like cute like options.
They have all kinds of colors. They also make a wine glass one. But I will say, this is like what my husband and I give people as like if we go stay with somebody, you know, on vacation or like for the weekend or whatever, because you can get them monogrammed.
Cute.
Or like put like the name of, you know, somebody's name on them, or like they're a good wedding present, because they just get used. And they do like have a wine glass one. They don't have a champagne flute one, which Corkscrew has, but it's not very good. It's just something like I use it every single day, and I pack one in my suitcase like when I go on vacation or like if I'm on the road.
That's when you know. Because
like it upsets me. Yeah, so like upsets me when I'm like, oh, but my coffee is cold, or like my cocktail ice is melted.
No, I'm with you, because you know what? It's like one of those like first world problem kind of things.
1,000%.
But it's also like when you find the thing, and this is what this podcast is all about, right? It's like when you find the thing that actually just like solves the problem that you just thought you had to live with, and you're like, oh, okay. I mean, like now we're good. Like,
yeah. And now it's like, you know, it's now obviously it's also sustainable. So if I'm like out and about, I can like get somebody to put my coffee in the Yeti, you know, like it's just it's so much better.
Oh,
I love it. I love it so much. And then obviously like that was my everyday usage thing.
Yep.
And then also I was going through, I was like, oh my God, like so many skincare products, the like mascara, I was just like, you know, microplane. That's why we went with the microplane.
I think the microplane is a great the thing about skincare, and I love when people come on and recommend skincare and beauty stuff, because I think people like the way people talk about it is it comes from like a real place of passion, and there's nothing better than being like, of the 9,000 moisturizers, like I actually found one that works for my skin. But the thing is, it's like it's not super universal, you know, so it's like people love hearing other people talk about their beauty products, but also like something like a micro, like something that is so universally adaptable to like anyone who is listening is like the sweetest spot. And I'm so now excited to know that this thing exists in my kitchen and I know how to use it. And I can't wait to tell Dan that I know how to use it. He'll be like, yeah, we've had this conversation. I'm like, I don't hear you when you talk. And that's the difference. Okay. But like that I love. And I love that it's only $15.
Yeah, and it's so – do you ever have things – I feel like in my marriage, it's like I've probably talked about how much I like a microplane like over and over to Logan. And then if somebody – if I was like, could you grab me the microplane? He'd be like, what is that?
Yep. Correct. Yeah, we – we – and the episode that I did with Danny Mullen, who is the owner of Semicolon, which is a bookstore in Chicago. She's the only Black woman-owned bookstore owner. We were talking about how like the things that our partners do – And one of Dan's new things is that if I call to have him from another room, he pretends he doesn't hear me to train me out of doing it. And guess what? I will never be trained, and I will train him out of trying to train me. But similarly, yeah, if he was like, can you grab this thing? I would be like, I have literally no idea what you're talking about. Sorry. And what, you know what? My last question to you, because I feel like I was looking through your site, and a thing that that popped out was talking about wedding registries.
And when
we did our wedding registry, it was also, I know that you said you kind of went about it all the wrong way. So did I.
Yes.
because it's very difficult to, especially when you already are living together and you've already kind of like bought all the things in your house. It's really, you know, you can do like the upgrades and get like the better versions of different things, but you also kind of like, yeah, I feel like my mom, I think, called at one point and was like, why do you have like 4 different Dutch ovens? And I was like, well, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But
is this a trick question?
Right. I was like, I don't know who's asking.
Like, did you not get my invitation to the chili cook-off?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. What's wrong with you? Right. Excuse me, when I have 4 burners going and I'm making chili for 400, I think you know the answer, Mom. My question is, though, so I really kept, the only thing I kept seeing for knives was big blocks with like 100 knives in them. And yeah. I know enough now that you really don't need 100 knives. So I want to know from like an actual chef who like went to school, what kind of knife situation people need. And it doesn't have to be like a brand. What's the most, like, what is the most versatile like knife? Because I feel like people get knife blocks and they use like 2 knives, and then the knife
blocks are completely unnecessary. And also, like, there's some brands. So like I use Shun knives and I really love them. They are really expensive, but I do feel like knives are something that are worth the investment because you'll hopefully have them for years and years and years
and
if
you also
take care
of
them properly.
Professionally. So that would make sense.
But like a lot of brands will let you buy individual knives and then you can create your own set. And the truth is like, for me, like, it's like, it really depends on what you cook, but on a base level, you really only need a chef's knife. And I would go with like a 6 to 8 inch knife, anything, you know, like there's like a 9 inch, 10 inch, like those are huge and you do not need those. Like a 6 inch will probably serve most basic home cooks. And then a serrated knife for when you're cutting like bread or tomatoes or something.
Yeah.
And then usually like what people say is a chef's knife, a serrated knife, and a paring knife. But I use my paring knife so rarely.
Really?
And yeah, like the little guy.
Yep.
And like, yeah, like you want to use it for like hulling strawberries, or like I'll use it to like mince a shallot, or like if I'm slicing a garlic clove or something. But like it doesn't get nearly as much action as my chef's knife. And so like in order, it would be chef's knife, serrated knife, paring knife, but like I really think you get away with 2.
Wow.
But if you're somebody like, there are certain things where it's like it is really helpful to have like a flexible fish knife if you're somebody who like eats fish on a regular basis and like you want to like take the skin off or something of a fillet. But like again, that's not very common, and you could still do that with your chef's knife.
I love. And do you also like sharp, because we have like a knife sharpener?
I don't, this sounds ridiculous, but like there's a kitchen store in my neighborhood in New York, and they sharpen knives for $5 a pop. Yep. And I just do it there because I like love my knives so much. And I'm always,
you're going to be the, you're
you know,
gonna,
some of
yeah.
the at home sharpeners, like you can catch an edge, like you can just like, you can do pretty serious damage to your knives.
Yep.
And like, to me, that investment is well worth it. And it's like, if you're, people are always like, how often should I sharpen my knives? And I'm like, it depends how often you cook. Quarterly is probably fine if you're a home cook, you know, like even twice a year is most of, I know people who have not sharpened their knives since they got them, and like, they're still fine, but like, it's not ideal. You should be regularly sharpening them, just in the sense that it's going to help prolong, you know, the life of your knife, et cetera. But it's also just like going to make your experience cooking so much better when you have to saw at things.
Oh, it's horrible. And that's when you get hurt. I mean, that's really,
that's truly when you get hurt. Yeah.
Similarly, we have a knife sharpener. Again, I say this all the time. I just want people to understand. I'm not making up that I don't know my way around the kitchen. I'm married into my kitchen. We have all of this stuff. I don't know what it is, and I don't know what it does, and I'm probably never going to learn. We have a knife sharpener, but there was a guy in Brooklyn who used to drive around his knife sharpening truck, and And he would park in Park Slope. Like, you kind of could count on him for like the third Saturday of every month for like 6 hours, and people would just like come with their knives, and he sharpened knives for like, yeah, like $5.
That's so nice.
And it was so, it was such a cool like little slice of community. And that I miss about Brooklyn, and just miss about being out and in the world in general, is that like, oh, the knife sharpening truck, like we're like in 1905 and like,
yeah.
I'm getting on my horse and going to the knife sharpening truck in Park Slope. But yeah, I think that that is a really good piece of advice, because I think people think like, and by people, I mean me, I think you do try to get the stuff like, oh, I'm going to buy the knife sharpener because that'll save me time and money and I'll sharpen my own knives. But if you have a very expensive knife and there's a chance that you could like fuck it up by trying to sharpen it yourself, build whatever it costs to sharpen it into the cost of the knife, because then it's not your fault if something goes wrong. You know, I assume these stores have insurance or whatever, like they're not going to mess it up. But yeah, I don't trust myself to be able to do that. Clearly. So I think that that is actually a really good piece of advice.
Yeah. And so like, it's like also like those knife sets, it's cheaper to buy individual knives, and then you can get one of those, like, I have, I'm never going to remember the name, but it's like basically a knife holder that is good looking. It's wooden on the outside. And then on the inside, it's like this weird, like, you know, I'm trying to think of those things, you know, you put your hand in it and your handprint stays.
With the little needles.
Yeah.
Like, I know exactly like what you're talking about. It's like a little, it's like turf grass for your knives, and it like goes down deep.
Yes.
No, I know exactly what that is. Yeah, I mean, I think that those are the things. Like, everyone has a knife block on their counter space, and no one has counter space. Like, unless you are living in a Nancy Myers kitchen, like, you don't have counter space. And a knife block is one of those things that I think people think that they have to have them. But, like, you could also just get a magnetic strip on your fridge and just, like, or, you know, and do the knives that way. See, I do know some kitchen.
You know many things.
I'm an observer of my kitchen.
Also, hot tip, people. We can't all have a Nancy Myers kitchen, but there is an awesome Nancy Myers kitchen Spotify playlist that is amazing to cook to.
Is there really?
Yes. Just type in Nancy Myers kitchen in Spotify and there's a great playlist.
Oh my gosh, look at this. I'm looking at right now. Oh my God, you're right. Myers kitchen Spotify. This is fun. I see. 79 great songs. Wow. Serena, you really came with like the works. And now I want to be best friends. I'm so happy that you joined us. I'm going to link to everything in the show notes. You guys can learn more about knives. I encourage you to take a virtual cooking class, because I'm going to do one. And it's going to be great. And we will actually keep the camera on so you can hear us bickering.
I love it.
Don't even have to just assume that it's happening. We will just let you hear it. Thank you so, so much for your time and for coming to
the
show.
Thank you for having me. This is the most fun I've had in weeks.
I'm so, I know all of our standards are low, and I am so happy to hear that. Everyone, Serena, tell everybody where they can follow you or read you online.
You can find me at domesticate-meat.com. Lots of recipes, other things. And then I am at Serena G. Wolf on Instagram and Twitter and all socials, but I don't really use anything other than Instagram.
Smart. Very smart. Very smart.
Also, my books are The Dude Diet and The Dude Diet Dinner Time, which are everywhere.
The Dude Diet and The Dude Diet Dinner Time. That is wonderful. Thank you so much for coming. And everyone, you can follow along with G Thanks Just Bought It at G Thanks Just Bought It Pod on Instagram. And in between episodes, we talk about stuff like products you guys recommend, stuff that doesn't make it onto the show, and lots more. So come follow us there, and we will see you all next week.